from 6 on 2FM.
Yes, well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for another entertaining afternoon. It is Wednesday, the 27th of July. I am Shane Dawson, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Alan Colley and David Wilson are in studio to talk Irish clubs in Europe, transfer news, and all the latest from the Euros as England reach the final.
Whatever happens in the final now, if girls are not allowed to play football, just like the boys can, in their PE, after this tournament, then what we're doing? We've got to make sure that they are able to play and get the opportunity to do this, because it's going to inspire a lot of people. But if there's no legacy to this, like what we saw with the Olympics, if there's no legacy after this, then what are we doing? Because girls should be able to play, because this is as proud as I've ever felt of any England side.
Being right bang on as always. If anyone's in the Dublin area, Shelburne are playing Bohemians and Talca Park in the Women's National League to inspire some future generations. In rugby, we've Bernard Jackman on news of an Irish lawsuit being taken by ex-players over brain injuries. In ladies football, it's All-Ireland final week, and we ask Nadine Doherty if Kerry can do the senior football double and overcome need.
Huge scores. They've scored 15 goals in the championship to date. So it's just going to be really interesting how that lovely style of football they play matches up against, I suppose, the real structure of the Meath machine that we talk about all the time.
All of that, plus Don McLean with the latest from the Galway Plate Day and Ballybrit. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us at 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. It is great to have your company on this Wednesday evening. Alan Colley, former professional footballer and now five-a-side artiste, is standing across from me, and beside him is RT Sports' David Wilson. Gentlemen, how are you both? It is Wednesday evening. It is the hump of the week, so let's air some positivity this evening. We're going to be getting in-depth and having a very serious conversation with Bernard Jackman. Before we do so, Alan, how's life? Long time no talk. How's the Women's Euros been for yourself?
Evening, Shane. It's good to see you. It's a couple of weeks anyways. I was flat out on the Women's Euros for the last couple of weeks, and it was absolutely brilliant. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. The games have been so exciting. The standard has been very, very good. And now, obviously, that we're down to... I covered all the group games, but now that we're down to the last four now, obviously, I did feel it would probably go up a notch when we get to the latter stages, like most competitions, and we were down to the elite teams, and we've certainly seen that in the quarterfinals and now obviously the semi-final as well. Obviously it was very one-sided with England last night, but even though I had Sweden down as dark horses going into the tournament, they never really hit the heights that I expected them to, and I fully expected England to get through last night and probably win as comfortably as they did, because I've been very impressed with England. I have to say they're very, very strong. But on the other side of the draw, and obviously the semi-final tonight with Germany and France, they have been the other team that I've been most impressed with. Germany, they've been really, really strong. I covered a game against Spain where obviously Spain had all the possession, and we saw Spain against England who were very, very good, but Germany were just so efficient in typical German fashion in what they do, so organised, so disciplined, and we're just picking them off on the counter-attack, and I think they've grown as the competition has gone on as well. So I'm sure we're going to discuss it later on, but definitely they've been the second team that I've been most impressed with. So I think we're down to the teams that we probably expected that we would be down to, and the fact that England as well, the home nation and all, and the excitement, and I know over here we're looking in from kind of a little bit envious maybe, and we're thinking if they go on and win it, the usual England, we never hear the end of it, but they've been absolutely brilliant, Shane, the team, and they're a really, really good team, great to watch,
and audacious goal last
unbelievable
night.
Goal Russo, and she's come on in all the games and made such an impact as well, and there's obviously the debate over should she start over Ellen White. The manager stuck with Ellen White throughout the games, and I think it's been the right decision, because the firepower to have coming off the bench as well, as we've seen last night, is really, really strong, and that's what maybe separates them from the rest as well, the strength and depth that they have real quality coming off the bench, but they've been great. I have to say they've been really, really good. Ciara Walsh in midfield, Frank Kirby has gotten a little bit better as the tournament has gone on as well. Stanway has been brilliant, so they've been really good, and I think we're set up for obviously a huge game tonight, but I think the final will be an absolute cracker.
Absolutely, and expected 90,000 capacity Wembley is already sold out, so it could surpass the record attendance for any Euros match for men or women. But as you did mention, Alan, we will be chatting, previewing the women's semi-finals, we'll be chatting Shamrock Rovers, obviously out of Champions League qualification, they're heading towards Europa League, or at the very least the Conference League, and you're down in Sligo tomorrow, I know, so we we will be previewing tomorrow evening's matches, Pats over in Slovenia as well, and plenty of transfer news in League of Ireland. David Wilson, just to say a quick hello to yourself, you were in Tala yesterday evening. As I say, we will be diving into the match in detail, but an enjoyable trip to South Dublin.
Yeah, it was a good performance from Rovers. Probably needed to score maybe two goals when they're on top in the first half. They finally got the second goal. It was probably against the run of play when Ludogorets went down to 10 men. But Ludogorets are a good side. A lot of strength and depth, massive wage budget. So
the experience shone through in the end.
They played. I think Stephen Bradley said it in his post match as well, that they showed all their experience, and they showed like that they've qualified for a lot of group stages over the last couple of years, and they showed all the know-how, and that's the level that Rovers are probably trying to aspire to right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen Bradley adamant that the Richie Towell incident was a foul, and that's the one that got away, although Twitter tells me that was a dive. But
it was a blatant dive.
It was a blatant dive. Yeah, there you have it.
I was right behind him.
Why didn't he carry on in and get a shot off? It's looked like he's looking for him, waiting for the contact.
Jeez, League of Ireland football players looking for contact and waiting for never. Alan Colley, never. You won't see that this evening. Shelburne Bows and the Women's National
Absolutely.
League. I'll tell you that much. Okay, gentlemen, you're both sticking around because we're going to chat association football, but time to turn our attention to rugby football news in the company of Bernard Jackman. Bernard, pleasure as always to chat. Unlike when we usually kind of have our previews and our reviews and we have a bit of fun, this is a serious topic, to be fair, because news today, Johnny Watterson in the Irish Times broke the story, and it's been picked up elsewhere, of course, that the Irish Rugby Football Union will be part of a class action taken by former players who claim they suffered serious brain injury while playing the sport. This week, it was reported that proceedings are to be issued by UK-based legal firm Rylands Law on behalf of a group of professional and semi-professional players against World Rugby, the English Rugby Football Union and the Welsh Rugby Union. In addition, the IRFU, while technically not part of the Rylands action, will be included in proceedings through a Dublin-based solicitors firm, Maguire McClafferty LLP. The company mainly specialises in litigation and personal injury law, dealing with all types of accident claim compensation cases. So what we know is there are a number of Irish players involved. We don't know how many, and the claim is similar to the one in Britain in terms of injury, which is namely chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And apologies if I've butchered that pronunciation. But Bernard, I suppose this is the first time we know there has been cases in the past, mainly in schoolboy rugby, we have seen court cases come to light, and then there's been settlements outside of court. But this is the first time that we've seen kind of a whole body, and we don't know how many players are involved. But it's been reported in Britain, but now it's in Ireland, and this will have huge ramifications on the sport going forward.
Yeah, look, it probably broke about a year and a half ago. Certainly, the law firm that are representing some of the high-profile cases in against the WRU, Welsh Rugby Football Union, the Rugby Football Union, and World Rugby, they contacted me along with a lot of other ex-players who had, I suppose, history of concussions about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, looking to see did I want to be part of a case. And thankfully and luckily, I don't have any symptoms, so obviously it wasn't for me. But I've been following it with interest. I think anyone involved in the game follow with interest, and it's taken a while to get to this stage. And I suppose it was always naive that there wouldn't be Irish players involved who obviously have suffered and are still suffering from the after effects of the concussions they got playing. So my understanding of it was that the legal firms wanted to have some test cases. So but behind that, there's over 100 players who have registered interest or symptoms. So this could be a huge moment for the game. And look, it's we don't know who the Irish players are, but when you read the likes of the Welsh, former Welsh captain Ryan Jones, he's been diagnosed with early onset of dementia. Steve Thompson, obviously the former English World Cup winner, Carl Heyman, the All Black prop, who suffered from severe depression and ongoing issues. There's some really horrific stories out there, and you couldn't not but really feel for them and hope that they can find some way of managing this for the rest of their lives. And then obviously from the other side of it is you know, who's at fault here? Is anyone at fault? I think that's the issue for the ex players, is to try and say there was negligence on behalf of the union or World Rugby. But it's going to be absolutely huge. I think from the other point of view, World Rugby and the unions have tried to make the game safer and are constantly doing that. And I think anyone who watched that second test in New Zealand, you know, the All Blacks had a red card and a yellow card, and I was doing some media work for some New Zealand radio stations that week of the game, and the it was a kind of a, the equivalent of live line. It was a call in, and the public that were calling in were saying, "Oh, you know, rugby's gone soft." So we're still not there yet in terms of understanding, I suppose, from a playing point of view, how we need to be better in terms of our tackle technique. There's still too many headshots. And I've been surprised how slowly that has gone out of the game, because we're probably a year and a half into a real clampdown from an officiating point of view. But yes, we're not seeing a change in players' behaviour. So I hope it's going to get better. I think World Rugby are right to be hard in terms of sanctions, because that's the only way of getting players to change behaviour. And also then it's the ongoing, you know, work around tackle technique, and also adapting the laws of the game to make the game safer. So it's certainly interesting times and worrying times for obviously the current internationals or the current professionals and obviously the past ones as well, who are now starting to seem to be growing in numbers with obviously symptoms of brain injury.
Yeah, you mentioned those players there, Heyman Jones and indeed Steve Thompson, and they argue that the sports governing bodies were negligent in that they failed to take reasonable action to protect players from permanent injury caused by repetitive concussive and sub-concussive blows. So the issues for the Irish claimants are similar in nature to those of the former rugby players that we mentioned there, who have been diagnosed with early onset dementia and other irreversible neurological impairments, which they claim were caused by playing rugby and receiving repeated blows to the head during their career. All of them now have retired due to concerns over the lasting effects. I am just plucking that from the article in the Irish Times. And for those who are saying rugby's gone soft, I mean, you even listen to Steve Thompson's comments of, "I feel like my world is falling apart. I'm really scared because I've got three children, three stepchildren, and I want to be a fantastic dad. I lived 15 years of my life like a superhero, and I'm not. I don't know what the future holds." I mean, for players playing the game now, are World Rugby doing enough? Like, how can we protect players more?
Yeah.
Or is that even the case?
Yes. Yeah, so look at it. Look, obviously, it's probably a small minority who think the game has gone soft. But my point is, we need to realise it's not. And the modern player, the impact and load that they suffer or encounter on a weekly basis in match days is far greater than, you know, than when I retired in 2010. So, for example, you know, a modern second row will make someone make 20 tackles in a game and 10 carries, where, you know, 10 years ago was half that. The ball in play is a lot longer. So, you know, the game has gone far from soft. Guys are more powerful, technique is better. So the impacts are absolutely huge. I think what World Rugby are trying to do is, by having a real focus on this, of protecting the head, and they're trying to change players' behaviour, and not the players go out there with a, you know, intention of hurting another player, but you know, the tackle, you know, if you want to stop the ball, at the moment the philosophy is, you know, to tackle at chest level, and then you're not too far away from a little bit of mistiming or over exuberance or the player dipping or change of direction, and you make head contact, and that's what we need to try and cut out of the game. And then the other thing that the World Rugby have become much stronger on, and this is something that wasn't the case in the early days of professionalism, is the amount of contact during the week. You know, it used to be far greater than it is now. Everything now is measured and controlled. So the players are in a far better kind of working week environment than we were back then. So, but World Rugby are leading the way in that, and there's a lot of research going into it. So look, I think the governing bodies are doing the best they can. I think the professional players are very lucky in that they've got really good medical care around them. But I think, you know, the professional game is 1% or less of the playing population. And what I'm heartened by is how seriously a serious concussion has been taken in the amateur game and at school level and in underage and clubs. I think there's been a massive improvement there in terms of understanding how dangerous it can be if it's not handled properly, and how players are withdrawn straight away. So that's a real positive, because that's the majority, you know. And even this case, as tough as it will be, and it's horrible to see people suffering, if again it can educate, you know, the amateur players that, you know, that concussion has to be taken seriously, well then at least it's a small positive from a huge negative.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Bernard Jackman, obviously we will know more in the coming months, but really appreciate you taking the call, and we'll be interesting to see how this one unfolds. So from rugby football to association football, Alan Colley and David Wilson are still with me. We'll be chatting soccer in a few moments' time. Stay with us here in Game On.
Game On.
Football.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to Game On. Shane Dawson here alongside Alan Colley and David Wilson as we chat football. And Alan, we're going to start with the Women's Euros. We briefly mentioned England through to the final of Euro 2022 in a sold-out Wembley. Who will they meet? Well, it will be either France or Germany. News today that winger Clara Buhl will miss Germany's Euro 2022 semi-final against France after testing positive for COVID. The 21-year-old has played in all four of her country's games so far, all of which Germany have won, scoring 11 goals and not conceding any. France are attempting to reach final for the first time as they face the 8-time winners. I know we briefly mentioned it at the top of the show, and dark horses in Germany. You've been impressed by them, but I suppose when it all is said and done, I'm pressing you for a prediction. And how do you see this match unfolding?
Well, that's a huge blow. I didn't realise that over Clara Buhl, because she's been absolutely amazing, Shane, and you'll be hearing plenty about her going further as obviously her career progresses, because she's a serious talent. So that would kind of lean me back towards it being a little bit tighter, because she's been an absolute star. But I'd still have to stick with Germany. You mentioned there they've scored 11 goals, they haven't conceded. That's the biggest strength that they have, is how disciplined and organised they are. There's a girl who plays at the back, Hegering, centre half. She's absolutely outstanding as well. Typical kind of almost like a throwback centre half, no nonsense defender, great to watch. Wears her heart in her sleeve, and they're just so disciplined and organised. So I can't get away from, even though France are very, very good, don't get me wrong, but the fact of no Katoto as well, who missed obviously the couple of games before this doing her ACL, I just would have to stay with Germany, because I've been so impressed from particularly that night when they played Spain. I think on this side of the draw, I actually tipped back then, I felt it would be an England-Germany final, so I can't get away from that now. And the fact that England are there, who I fully expected to get there,
yeah.
I would have to stick with my prediction of Germany, and I think they'll get the job done.
I'm going for the Kenny Shields train of thought of, geez, they have to win it. They have to win it now. It'd be an absolute failure if they don't win it. I love this post-match conference. It's like, should they have to now? It'd be downright failure if they don't.
But funny enough, I think if Germany get there, I don't think they will win it.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So you're backing already. Already you're going for a Germany win.
Yeah, I think Germany will get the job done. And it'll be set up, imagine an England-Germany final, 90,000 people.
Yeah.
It's almost set up for it already.
Yeah.
But I actually think it would be so typical of England that they do all the hard work get to the final and then they lose to the Germans. Like, it's written in the stars already, Shane.
Well, unrest in the French camp and never write off the Germans. That's if you're listening for your stereotypical Euros bingo, you can take both those boxes.
Absolutely. But no, they're very, very strong, Germany. They really are. So I'm looking forward to the game. It should be a cracking game as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, live on RT television as well after a game on. So if you're listening to the radio, stick on the box. How impressed have you been thus far with Shamrock Rovers, Alan? Because they lost on aggregate to Ludogorets, even though they won last night's match. I chatted to David about that. We mentioned the Richie Tell incident. Was it a dive? Was it a free? And we've given our thoughts on that. But now they are bound for the Europa League preliminaries and meeting with North Macedonian champions FK Skopje, who lost 3-2 in aggregate to Dinamo Zagreb. Rovers had a couple of matches called off in the league. At the very least, they'll be in some form of European competition, and deservedly so.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, again, kind of just reiterates the fact that that's the route to go. If we're hoping for a club to get to a group stage, you have to be in the Champions League, because of obviously the backdoor system that's even more prevalent now because of the Conference League. So hopefully, Shane, and I always felt, to be fair, that's the most realistic target for one of our clubs, absolutely. And the introduction of the Conference League is brilliant for our clubs because of the route that it offers. And if we were to get to a group stage, or it's an attainable target, and it's also something where we would be competitive in. Whereas even though they put up a really good showing last night, Ludogorets, as David outlined at the start, are on a whole different level in terms of finances and everything else that goes with it. Now, Shamrock Rovers did absolutely brilliant last night, put up a brilliant performance. Now, there could have been a case of Ludogorets obviously seeing them last week and being so emphatic in the first half, you're 3-0 up, you're coming over here, were they going full tilt? That's not to take away from Shamrock Rovers' performance last night, because in the first half they were very, very good. But you'd always feel with a club at that of that level and that stature and year on year playing in European competition and the level they've reached over the years, that they could always up the gears, and that's what you would have felt probably last night looking at it as well. So I think what last night's performance gives them is huge confidence going into the next round, obviously, as you say, because they're, again, that might be realistic that they could beat the North Macedonian team, and you would hope so off the basis of the performance last night. But if they weren't to do, they'll drop down with a shot at the Conference League as well. So I think they're in a really, really strong position. I'm sure Stephen Bradley, he was very disappointed, I know from his quotes, the first half, even though Ludogorets, because we covered the game, Ludogorets were outstanding in the first half. I know he felt his team didn't play to the level, but he would have been delighted with last night's performance and the fact that, as I say, they got the victory as well, and it will give them huge confidence going into next week's match.
Absolutely. Not to drag up the past, but you'd be kicking yourself at the end of
and
the first
half. And that was the killer. And we felt that last week as well, Shane, because
such a blow.
In fairness, even though I'm saying Ludogorets were really, really good, and they were, the second half, Shamrock Rovers put in a really good performance last week, and you would have been coming away at 2-0 thinking we've played really well here and we could rattle them in Tala. When the third goal went in, like everybody, we all felt that was the killer goal, and unfortunately, even though they played so well last night, 3-0 was a huge mountain to climb.
No, absolutely. Well, Shamrock Rovers will be boosted for the rest of the season because they've brought in former Republic of Ireland under 21 international Simon Power. The 24-year-old started out at Cabin Teely back in 2015, where he made one appearance in the First Division. He moved on to UCD for two seasons before signing for Norwich City in January 2018. He had four loan spells in Dordrecht in the Dutch second tier, Scottish Premiership side Ross County, and twice at the National League North side Kings Lynn Town. And he was part of Stephen Kenny's under 21 team in 2019, earning four caps. So we'll be interested to see how Simon gets on. And also, Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent reporting that Dan Cleary is to return to the League of Ireland, and he will be returning to Shamrock Rovers. So he has left Scottish top flight side St Johnstone for family reasons. Cleary joined St Johnstone on a 2.5-year deal in January and went straight into their side, playing a big part in their successful attempt to avoid relegation. Rovers have moved quickly to tie up a deal for Cleary, as reported by Daniel McDonnell, as I say, and it's a timely arrival given that key centre-half Pico Lopez is out for the next 8 to 10 weeks with a knee problem. So two signings that will and should boost the Shamrock Rovers squad.
Absolutely, yeah, because of course they lost Mandrea in the early part of the month as well, so I think that's good business from Shamrock Rovers. Simon Power, obviously a young player as well, almost kind of coming back here to kind of ignite his career again, if you like. Whereas Dan Cleary, I think, is a brilliant signing. Not only the fact that Lopez is injured for the coming weeks, but he's a very, very good player as well, and he obviously has experience here in the league. I saw a tweet from Dan earlier just about that, he was saying with the family situation. So the fact that he's coming home and his things tied up, I think it's good business by Shamrock Rovers and just strengthens them further, Shane.
Dundalk transfer news as well, and David will be updating us on European transfer news, and we will be chatting England. But I'm just strolling through Twitter there. Daniel McDonald's getting all the credit this evening, because Dundalk will announce signing Alfie Lewis later tonight. So he will be returning to the League of Ireland to be reunited with Stephen O'Donnell. He, of course, done very well with Pats, so we'll be interested to see how that. Dundalk did confirm Robbie McCourt has signed permanently from Sligo Rovers, and Runar Haga has signed on loan for the rest of the season from Hibs in Scotland, a young Norwegian winger. I won't put you on the spot to give me your in-depth tactical knowledge on Runar Haga, but judging from a highlight reel that Hibs played Norwich in pre-season, he looks like he's got a bit about him.
I'll give you all that analysis after I see him finish, don't worry. But I think the other two are good signings.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Robbie McCourt as well. And some people might be surprised that, obviously, with Dan coming back, because he was with Dundalk at How Come Deo, and I'm not sure where to win from, I'm sure they were, but I know he's big friends with Jack Byrne as well, so there might have been something in that, and going back to play with Shamrock Rovers maybe might have been more appealing at this moment in time, whereas when he left Dundalk, obviously they were very, very good still. But I think the signings of Robbie McCourt is a very good signing, and Alfie Lewis in particular, because as you say, when he was at Pats, he was
smashing.
Very, very good player. So he will strengthen them too, and that's what we need, Shane. Even though we're talking to Shamrock Rovers and the Champions League and strengthening, we need the other teams to strengthen, to try and put it up to them a little bit as well. So I think that's good business by Stevie as well.
Absolutely. And Mark Connolly has left Dundalk. He's gone back officially to Scotland, but our reports are that he will probably be going to Derry City, but that is just mere speculation at the moment. Cork City also confirmed that Ronan Hurley has left the club in order to pursue a soccer scholarship in the US of A. And my final bit of League of Ireland news is Bluebell United versus Galway has been moved to Talca Park at 3 p.m.
So, okay. And
there's your random fact of the day. I do briefly just want to touch before, I've been teeing this up for a while, so David, you have a lot of pressure on here to give me European transfers. St. Pat's in Europe tomorrow and you're heading out to Sligo. We will be previewing this in depth on tomorrow evening's show. Pat's and Murrah is 1-1 ahead of the tie in Slovenia, whereas Sligo have a 1-0 lead, and you were to believe the Scottish papers. Irish Minnows, Sligo Rovers hold a 1-0 lead over Motherwell.
And according to John Russell, he's using that as motivation as well, and rightly so, because there probably is an element of being disrespectful towards them, and they would look down their noses maybe at a team from Ireland going over there and beating them. But I watched the game last week, and Sligo Rovers, if anything, just should have been 2-0 with the penalty. Now Motherwell had a good few chances, and the keeper played well too, McNicholas, which you would expect. But I think they go into the game tomorrow with great confidence as well. I know the town is absolutely hopping. People can't wait for the game. Probably one of the biggest games in the showgrounds in years and years, Shane, you know. And not only because of what's on offer, but the fact that Motherwell, SPL team, and to beat them over there in Fir Park, it should hold no fear for them. You would expect Motherwell, having seen Sligo as well, will be much more attuned to the challenge that they'll face tomorrow, and the fact that they've another game under their belt because they're still in pre-season.
Yeah.
But Sligo have a great opportunity. They've nothing to lose, Shane, and hopefully they embrace the game and go after the game the way they should do, and not be fearful of maybe the occasion and the crowd and what's on offer and what's at stake. So hopefully they do that, and it should be an absolute brilliant night in the showgrounds.
Hopefully they do that. Will they do that? Will they progress?
I'd love to see it. I would love to see it. Obviously, everyone knows I'm from Sligo and they're my team. It would be amazing. It would be absolutely amazing. And I would expect Motherwell to improve greatly on what we saw last week as well. The fact that they have taken a lot of stick, as you say, back home in Scotland would have probably angered them, and I'm sure their manager and different people as well, and they'll be out to put the wrongs of last week very much put them right. So it will be a difficult game. I'm sure John Russell and his players know it'll be a very difficult game as well, but as I say, they're in with every chance, and it would be just amazing, I think, for the league as well, not only for Sligo Rovers. It'd be amazing for the league as well, because that's where the league teams are judged on. And in terms of us trying to progress the league and improve the league, the money that's on offer now financially for European football, Pat's the same as you say. Pat's probably feel as though they've left a goal or two behind them because they played ever so well last week, and that'll be much tougher going away to Slovenia. But let's hope one of them get through. Okay. I'm not going to say which one, but let's hope one of them get through.
Right, well, we will be previewing it in detail, and hopefully we'll have some more previews that will stick their neck out on the line and not be so half-hearted. David Wilson, Lisandro Martinez has been confirmed by Manchester United. What else has caught your eye in terms of transfers across the continent?
Well, Kasper Schmeichel has been linked with a move away from Leicester, quite surprisingly. He's one of their top appearance holders, and it looks like he could be going on his way out. A deal that's definitely done is Luis Suarez has gone to rejoin his boyhood club Nacional in Uruguay ahead of the World Cup. And Barcelona look like they're going to announce Jules Koundé this evening. He's turned down Chelsea, and looks like Barcelona are, you know, putting together some money from
God knows where.
Yeah, key banks and everywhere else.
Yeah, and are going to kind of sign another centre back. So interesting as well. And also Timo Werner and Anthony Martial both linked with moves to Juventus if they can't get Alvaro Morata to re-sign from Atletico Madrid.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see if any of those come true. We have 53 seconds left in our football chat. Alan Colley, Lisandro Martinez, Manchester United, will that be a positive pairing throughout the course of the season?
Well, hopefully, yeah, because I think with the manager and the way he wants to play, he's a footballing centre half. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Maguire. and Varane, because I think one of them will not play now. I think we all know the ones the fans don't want to play.
Yeah.
So I think there's a big challenge facing Harry Maguire, but the fact that he's saying he's keeping him captain, it'll be interesting to see. But the manager, in terms of his approach and how he wants to play now from the back, and that passing philosophy that he will bring from Ajax, very much Martinez, when the money they're paying for him, he will play. So that'll be interesting to see. Varane obviously disappointed as well last year. It wasn't just the case of being critical towards Maguire. I think Varane disappointed, but I think he might be stronger for that year under his belt this year. So as I say, it'll be a tough challenge for Harry Maguire, but I think they need other reinforcement, Shane. You look at the squads they're trying to compete with in terms of Man City and Liverpool, and they're not even close to getting back to that level. If you look at what they're competing with Chelsea and Spurs, even they're ahead of them in terms of their squads. And I think Spurs so far, I know we'll discuss this in depth as the league is about to start in a couple of weeks, but I think Spurs, out of everyone, have done the best business so far. And again, it just reiterates for me how good Conte is, and when he wants something, he goes after and he gets it. And I think Spurs will be the dark horses this year.
Okay, we'll be interested to see, as you say, the Premier League season fast approaching. Alan Colley, David Wilson, thank you both very much. Alan, you can stick the feet up now and watch the Galway Plate.
Lovely,
which we'll be getting Don McLean live update from the Galway races a little bit later on, but we're going to be chatting, previewing, I should say, Meath versus Kerry in the ladies' football final in the company of Nadine Doherty in a few moments' time.
Game on 2FM.
Now, it is great to have your company in this Wednesday evening. As I mentioned earlier, we are going to turn our attention to the ladies' football final. It is Meath versus Kerry this Sunday. And a little bit earlier on, I had a chat with Nadine Doherty previewing the big one on Sunday. And I began the conversation by asking, are both teams deserving of a place in the final? Because not many people predicted this pairing come the start of the championship.
Game on.
Ladies' football.
Yeah, well, look, I wouldn't have tipped a Meath Kerry final, that's for sure. While Kerry, obviously in Division 2 all year, playing lovely football, you know, you would have expected them to get out of the group for sure, but making a final, no more than Meath last year, it's almost a fairy tale journey for them. But fully deserving, Shane, as you said, for sure. Playing lovely football, playing lovely Kerry football. You know, they love to kick the ball. They move the ball at pace throughout the pitch. They defend high, and very deserving of being in the final. And look, Meath as champions, definitely deserving of being in the final. And we've touched on it nearly every program. They haven't had to play for a full 60 minutes in any of the games. We've probably had 20 minute windows of their absolute brilliance, and that's been enough to get them over the line. But it'll be intriguing, because these two teams haven't played competitively, I suppose, since last year's league final, whereby Meath were the underdogs, Kerry were heavy favourites, and you could say really that was the catalyst to what has been an incredible journey for Meath, where they're looking at Sunday and defending their title.
Would you read much into that result in particular, or is it a case of the teams have progressed, and we've seen that even throughout this championship, that they're different outfit, different forces to be reckoned with?
Yeah, I don't think you can read too much into a game well over a year ago. Very different forces, same names, but both playing very different football. They've both progressed massively. They've both gone on very different journeys. You know, Kerry have only reached Division 1 again this year. You know, they beat Armagh in the final, whereby they were probably going in as underdogs a year later. But yeah, wouldn't read too much into it. I'm sure they've played each other in challenge matches, which senior teams do consistently throughout the year. But no, that game would have no impact on Sunday.
Well, I suppose then, looking at this year in particular, and I suppose the standard of the teams and the stature of the teams as well, because people talk about Cork and, of course, Dublin more recently, but a win for Kerry would put them out in front on the all-time senior roll of honours list. They're currently on 11 championship wins, and that's a whole match by the great Cork teams that were dominant from 05 to 16. So you mentioned the traditional Kerry football. Like, what has caught your eye in particular? I suppose it's a very stereotypical saying, oh, they played that Kerry brand of football. But if you're to expand on that, really, and what's impressed you most from Kerry in particular in the run-up to this final?
Yeah, what I love about them, Shane, is, you know, there's no gaps in any of their team. Like, I actually have the programme here in front of me from the semi-final. And when you look at all those names there, like, there's six defenders. There's a huge amount of football in them. Like, not only are they very good defenders, like Kaylee Cronin and Emma Costello, they're the fullback and centre back. They could easily play centre forward and full forward. Like, that's how composed they are on the ball. Aisling O'Connell has been really fantastic at wing back, really brilliant at getting forward. And we watched that on Sunday. She just seems to kind of pop in at the last minute. I kind of compare nearly to like a Breed Corkery or Deirdre O'Reilly from that great team back in the day. Their goalkeeper, Kira Butler, very good, very understated, but very solid. And then for me, their real strength is, I think, their trio around midfield. Like, Anna Galvin sits back in the middle. So you kind of Anna Galvin, Koch Lynch and Lorraine Scanlon. And they win a huge, huge amount of possession around there. And they are nearly then the platform for, look, the household name, Louise Navarro Hertig. You could watch her play football all day, every day. I just see her as their clutch player. Like, you won't see her getting in for any real dirty ball, and she just seems to pop up in pockets and has this ability, no more than Emma Duggan at the other end. She's just razor sharp. Niamh Carmody has kind of come from nowhere this year, and her passing game is brilliant. She just spray the ball every direction. She's wonderful. And then you have, I suppose, kind of lesser players like young Danielle O'Leary. When a full forward, she's real dynamic in that she'll attack the full back line. So look, all in all, like, and I know I haven't named everybody, but they just play football, Shane. Like, there's no big structure to it. And interestingly, with this team, when I was writing a piece for the paper for the Independence this weekend, I just was doing a bit of research. This team, when they were coming up through under 16, under 14, during that period of time, Kerry reached, I think it was 5 under 16 finals and won 3 of them. And they reached 3 under 14 finals and won 2 of them. So a good few of this current crop are used to winning All-Irelands at some level. And they just seem to have kept up that style of football. And then their bench, what I really like about how they make their substitutions, it's very much, if you're not performing, you're off. And that's that their management team have no hesitation in making those big calls. So just all in all, they're just kind of unpredictable in a way, to be honest. Mm. And that's what I really like about them. Huge scores. They've scored 15 goals in the championship to date. So it's just going to be really interesting how that lovely style of football they play matches up against, I suppose, the real structure of the Meath machine that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, because It's a weird one in terms of this potent Kerry attack, and they're going to come up against such a strong Meath defence, which is probably Meath's foundation to their success so far. And then on the flip side of that, it's probably Meath's attacking is a bit weaker and Kerry's backline isn't possibly the greatest at defending. So it's in terms of key battles, and I know anytime I ask you this question, you always give wonderful answers, Nadine. And you go through two or three, and to be fair, it always comes to light that they are key decision makers, really, in how the outcome of the game will go. So in terms of, do you feel that this Kerry's attack will prevail, or will the structure that we've seen time and time again be so successful for Meath in terms of their defensive capabilities, that will come out on top?
Yeah, I'm probably better with my matchups than my actual prediction, Shane, to be honest.
I wasn't going to mention it.
Well, the thing with Kerry, when you look at their path, I suppose, to the final, and you take Munster into account, the only time they did come up against a real structured defence, I suppose, was against Cork in the Munster final, and they fell short there. You know, they haven't played Donegal competitively. They haven't played Dublin competitively. They'll be playing Meath for the first time competitively. So I genuinely don't have a clue how it'll go. You know, can they move the ball fast enough in that they bypass, you know, how Meath set up? I doubt it. I don't think they will every time. But what I do think they have, and perhaps where Donegal failed, was their ability to take their scores. You know, Donegal probably had more chances in that semi-final against Meath. I think Donegal created 19-20 chances and only executed 8 of them. So Kerry will take their chances, and that's for sure. And they will get chances against Meath, absolutely. I think in terms of matchups, you know, Meath don't really identify one-on-ones. They just keep to that 14 people behind the ball. But I'd imagine that Kerry probably will identify possibly Aisling O'Connell or Koch Lynch to pick up Emma Duggan and Vicky Wall. And then after that, I think you know, that, not that they won't worry about me, the individuals, but they won't really identify anybody else for special attention. But I think in terms of Meath, you know, because we've talked about Kerry extensively there, I think somebody who has been unbelievable for Meath this year and just hasn't really got the credit has been Stacey Grimes, both from play and her free taking duties. Only for her and Monica McGurk. I know Emma Duggan got those crucial points in those games, but it was Monica McGurk and Stacey Grimes who actually kept Meath in those games and gave themselves the platform whereby Emma could step up and take those scores. So, you know, Stacey probably deserves special attention. I'm just not sure if Kerry will allow somebody to do that. Perhaps Kayleigh Cronin, but it's a huge mismatch in terms of height and physicality, but it'll be interesting to see what they do there. Can Kerry break that down? They will. They will, definitely. They'll do it consistently, but I just feel Meath, they're very much hot favourites, Shane. Like, they have to be, you know, when they haven't hit the highs of last year, they're all Ireland champions. They're there again. They're huge, huge favourites for sure.
You feel, not that players will slip through the radar now, but in years gone by, that if the Kerry joint managers might just identify a Vicky Wall or an Emma Duggan and say, right, if we just stick two people on those players even, that perhaps Stacey Grimes or Monica McGurk or whoever, these other scores can come to the fore. So it's not going to be as easy as just trying to shackle a couple of players because of the spread of talent that Meath have and that Meath have developed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you look at their other forwards there, and I suppose it's Niamh O'Sullivan who comes to light. You know, Niamh has a great ability to pick off huge points when they're needed. But they don't have huge firepower. Like, they don't, Shane. You know, they've only scored two goals to date. They're very much a team who just, I suppose they play on the numbers, and they know if they hit that 12 to 14 points, they're very secure in themselves that at the other end, they're not going to ship more than 10 points. They really play the maths on it. And it is hard to see where other scores will come from Meath. You know, Orla Lally will always chip in with a point or a goal. You know, she's always good for one or two scores. But that is, I suppose, if you were to identify a weakness within that Meath team, it's they just don't have a huge number of players who do have an ability to score. And also, I suppose, with their bench, you know, their substitutions are made almost at the same time in every match, and it's generally between 55 and 60 minutes. And for me, that kind of identifies, okay, you're slowing the game down or your time wasting a little bit. You know, they often bring on Orla Byrne. I suppose she's a bit of a runner, and she'd come on for Marie O'Shaughnessy perhaps. But in terms of a dynamic player who might get a huge score or a goal, me don't really have that coming off the bench, whereas Kerry do. You know, Kerry do. They've huge options on the bench. But as I said, weaknesses within Meath, they're few and far between, but they are there. And I'd imagine Kerry will have watched them extensively, and they'll be looking to focus in on that if they do shackle those, I suppose, three or four players we've named, they feel they're in with a huge chance.
Even, I suppose, bookending that, Meath are the All-Ireland champions, and I wonder, do they get the credit they deserve? Now, I ask you this, it's a loaded question, but I'm plucking a quote from the Irish Examiner, from the Meath manager, Eamon Murray, who said, "I think we have done an awful lot for ladies football. Maybe we didn't get enough recognition for it," and that is from the LGFA. "I thought we should have got a little bit more, but we didn't. We could have got something like a thank you card or something." Now, this is the first year since Mayo and Monaghan clashed in 2002 that the senior final won't feature a Cork or Dublin. So is Eamon Murray and Meath, are they correct to feel a bit hard done by, do they not get the thanks they deserve?
Maybe Helen O'Rourke just forgot to put the stamp on the Christmas card, Shane. I don't know. Look, I actually read that piece myself, and he went on to say, you know, the Cork and Dublin, as you said, you know, have done huge things to the game. Cork and Dublin between them have won 16, 17 All-Irelands, and Meath have won one. And while it was fantastic, they probably won two. They could win more, almost a fairy tale story. I don't know.
If you're a Meath player, you're seeing those quotes, are you?
Like, I don't know. Well, yeah. If it was me, I'd be having a quiet word, I think, with Eamon. Look, it could be Eamon having a laugh with reporters too. You know, you don't know what context it was said in, but I think Meath have a long way to go. They're getting huge credit and deservedly so, but I think they have a long way to go, I suppose, to be in the same category as those Cork and Dublin teams. And also, you know, Eamon mentions there it's the first year that Cork and Dublin aren't in a final. Meath didn't play Cork or Dublin. They didn't beat Cork or Dublin, you know. So yeah, Eamon, I'd say he might get a Christmas card this year, but I don't think he'd be getting an individualised thank you for everything you've done for the LGFA card just yet.
Yeah, okay. Well, it remains to be seen. But no, it will be interesting to see how it goes. Listen, I do have to put you on the spot. You did mention Mead are favourites. Will you be sticking with the favourites then come Sunday afternoon in terms of who will be reigning supreme?
Yeah, I think so, Shane. I mean, they've just shown in the last couple of games that when the crunch is on, they really, really know how to close out games, and they just seem to have another gear in them when it's required. Kerry, look, I think it is going to be so tight. I think it's going to be tighter than people, you know, might expect. And I think Kerry will score goals. I think they will put up a bit of a score. But I just think Meath should have enough. And I think with this Meath team as well, you don't know where they're going next year with Vicky Wall going to Australia. And there's a lot of rumours swirling around that a huge number of these girls want to do the same. So, you know, it could be a last dance for them in a sense. I hope it isn't. I really hope it isn't. And I hope they stick together for a long time. But they could be really identifying this one as a huge one for them. So just slight favourites. Yeah. Okay. Have to go with Meath.
Game on.
Ladies football.
So they are the expert thoughts of Nadine Doherty, and it is All-Ireland Ladies Football Final Day on Sunday, 11:45 a.m. It is Antrim versus Fermanagh in the junior final. In the intermediate final, it is Laois versus Wexford at 1:45 p.m. And at 4 p.m, it is Kerry versus Meath. And for any fans of Antrim, Fermanagh, Laois and Wexford screaming at the radio as to why we did not preview the intermediate or junior final, unfortunately, time is against us on the live show, but that will be podcast in full, so you can listen to Nadine Doherty's thoughts on those matches as well. Just before we take a break and join Don McLean live from Ballybrit, some positive news from the FAI is that Ireland versus Finland, the crucial women's national team qualifier, is officially sold out. So Tallaght Stadium is the venue. It's not on until September 1st. And what are we, the 27th of July? It's already sold out. So brilliant news there. As I mentioned, we're going to be crossing live to Galway in the company of Don McLean, and we will reveal who won the Galway plate. So do stay with us here on Game On.
Game On.
Racing.
They turn for home in the plate. Hewitt comes on to the lead. Ashley Meadows shuffled out by the riderless horse, has to come wide. El Barra might have to do the same. Hewitt turns tight for home, has the advantage from its second. El Barra back then is Ashley Meadow. Cap Gentleman is next, and they're followed by Tarasso. But inside the closing stages, the riderless horse has come right across Hewitt. He might cost him the plate. On the near side, Tarasso's coming back at him, and Tarasso on the near side, the luckless Hewitt has got back on the far side, and it will be beat. Hewitt has won the plate from Tarasso. Back in third was
So, Don McLean, we just heard the closing stages of the Galway plate. It sounded like plenty of entertainment. Was it indeed a fascinating race?
It was. There was an awful lot going on, Shane. As you heard there, Richard Pugh's commentary on the run-in, the loose horse, that was the final act. The loose horse came across Hewitt and carried him right across the track from, I suppose, the middle of the track, right over to the far rail. And Jordan Gainford didn't panic. He just kept going forward on his horse, asking his horse to keep going forward. And in the end, Durasso came down the near side, but Hewitt had enough in reserve to get home by probably about a half length, or three parts of a length in the end. But fantastic win by Hewitt for John Hanlon, Shark Hanlon, who Hewitt won the Bet365 Gold Cup at Sandown back there last April. And the Bet365 Gold Cup was over 3 miles and 5 furlongs, so it's a drop back and trip to 2 miles, 6.5 furlongs for a Galway plate. Fantastic training performance by him. But as you say, Shane, plenty going on. Fire Attack was travelling well when he fell in front down the back straight, and he brought down Accelerator Express, who was the loose horse who hampered Hewitt on the run-in. Gabby Knackle fell at the final fence, and he was just starting to make his ground, and Easy Game was hampered on the way around, and plenty more besides. I'm sure we'll have a look at it a couple of times, but no, fantastic performance by Hewitt to go and win it.
Yeah, so it was Hewitt from Durasso, El Barra in third, and Ash Tree Meadow in fourth. There are, of course, a few more races still going on this evening. But what else has caught your eye today, Don?
Oh, well, it's been the Willie Mullins, Paul Townend show early on. Shane Cham Kiley was an impressive winner of the first race, a really impressive winner. And Paul Townend didn't have to get serious on him at all. We hadn't seen him in over 400 days, but he did it really well. Paul Townend just literally rode him out hands and heels, and you could see how taken he was with the horse. So he's a very exciting novice hurdler now. That was his maiden hurdle. And then Rock Road went and won the handicap hurdle, second race. Again, Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. Probably not quite as easily as Cham Kiley was in the first, but he did it well. He's a horse who he won the Mayo National at Ballinrobe earlier in the year, and his chase rating is way higher than his hurdles rating, but he did well to win. He stayed on well to get the better, and shoot first stayed on well as well, take second place behind him, but it never looked like he was going to get to Rock Road. And then the Mayor's Handicap hurdle went to Outback Flyer, who got the better of a good tussle with Tully Polani. Kevin Sexton rode Outback Flyer, and he and Rachel Blackmore and Tully Polani, they had a good battle on the run-in, but Outback Flyer, she just proved to be the stronger, and she went down and won by a couple of lengths. So good win for Peter Fahey as well, who usually does have a winner here. So, yeah, good win for him.
Absolutely. Okay, Sinead, Don McLean, thank you very much with that update from Ballybrit. As I said, a couple of more races on this evening, and the Galway Race Festival continues for the rest of the week, of which you can see live coverage on RT Television. So lots to look forward to. As I did mention, France-Germany is also live on RT for some Euros 2022 semi-final action. David Wilson, thank you very much for your company this evening. Alan Colley's already gone. He's off. He's probably at home watching the Galway play. I think he had someone else back, so he's probably not going to be a very happy man. But thank you very much for your company this evening. I'll be back tomorrow even from the same time, 6 p.m. here on 2FM. But do stay tuned, because Tara Kumar is up next after the news on 2FM.